From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. In Syria, intensified attacks by government and allied forces have reportedly killed dozens in the rebel-controlled area of eastern Ghouta near Damascus. Video of the scene uploaded on the internet showed rescuers running trying to reach casualties in the city of Hamouria. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said its monitors have witnessed airstrikes, rocket fire, and shelling on the besieged Damascus suburbs. The UN estimates 400,000 live in the area, which has been under government siege since 2013, causing malnutrition as supplies of food, fuel, and medicines dwindle. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov Monday said the problem is the presence of the Jabhat al-Nusra militants, and the UN Security Council has declared them terrorists. Meanwhile, Turkey has warned Syria against intervening in the northwest Afrin province, where it is battling Kurdish rebels. Deputy Turkish Prime Minister Bekir Bozdag said Turkey is watching reports closely of cooperation between Damascus and the Kurds. Sunday, a senior Kurdish official said a deal had been struck with the Syrian government for the army to enter the province and fight the Turks. Ankara considers the Kurds a security threat. A member of the Gupta family under investigation for alleged corrupt links to former South African President Jacob Zuma is challenging a court order freezing millions of rand in his bank account. Three Gupta brothers, accused of using their influence with Mr. Zuma to affect policy and amass wealth, have denied wrongdoing. South African authorities have also widened their probe as they search for suspects believed to be in India, China, or Dubai. Mr. Zuma stepped down last week after being ordered by the ruling African National Congress Party to do so. This is VOA News. In Iraq, Islamic State militants ambushed a convoy of pro-government militia fighters late Sunday near the northern city of Kirkuk, killing nearly 30. The Iraqi forces were pursuing the IS militants. Hadi al-Amiri of the Shia Militia Badr Brigade pledged to the families of the victims that he would seek revenge. Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi demanded those responsible be apprehended and brought to justice. Last December, Iraq proclaimed victory over Islamic State after it seized nearly one-third of the country in 2014. Maldives President Abdullah Yameen is seeking to extend his state of emergency in the Indian Ocean archipelago, popular with tourists. But the opposition boycotted Monday, leaving Parliament short of a quorum. David Brewster is a security analyst at the Australian National University.
Whatever process or non-process Yameen seeks to use, he will extend the state of emergency, really, until he's able to completely quash any opposition protest.
Mr. Yameen imposed the state of emergency February 5th for 15 days and annulled a Supreme Court ruling that overturned the convictions of nine opposition leaders and ordered their release. His administration has arrested members of the Supreme Court, including the Chief Justice, along with members of the opposition and even a former president, Mahmoud Abdul Gayoom. Latvia's anti-corruption agency is suspecting the nation's central bank chief of seeking bribes and has launched a criminal investigation. So far, no formal charges have been filed against Ilmars Remvits. Friday, his office was raided and he was briefly detained on Saturday. Remvits, in office since 2001, also sits on the European Central Bank. Israel has struck what is being called a historic contract for sales of billions of dollars worth of natural gas to Egypt. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the deal would bring billions to state coffers, strengthen the economy and regional ties. Israel's Tamar and Leviathan offshore gas fields said it will supply the private Egyptian firm Dolphinus Holdings with about 64 billion cubic meters of gas over a decade in a deal worth $15 billion. There's confusion whether rescue teams have reached the crash site of an Iranian airliner that crashed Sunday on a flight from Tehran to Yasuj. It's believed all 65 passengers and crew perished. The crash site is in central Isfahan province, a mountainous region where frigid temperatures and snow have hampered rescue efforts. A Nigerian bishop has resigned despite the defense of Pope Francis. Peter Eberi Okpaleke was appointed by then-Pope Benedict in 2012 as Bishop of Ihara in southwest Nigeria, but he's been rejected because he was not from within the diocese. The resignation came after what he described as the continuing violent reaction to his appointment. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberian President George Mani Weah begins a four-day official visit to France today, Tuesday.
This week, it is President Weah who returns to his former home less than a month after his election. Weah's four-day visit here is the last leg of a trip that also took him to Senegal and Morocco.
SBO correspondent Lisa Bryant in Paris, France. South Sudan rebels confirmed they have freed two Kenyan pilots after receiving a compensation. A journalist is assaulted in Malawi amid growing beliefs in superstition. And talks aimed at resolving Togo's political crisis are underway in the capital, Lomé.
We, as opposition, what we are doing over and over months in Togo is we're asking for the release of political prisoners, mainly those arrested arbitrarily.
Kojo Marcus Deman is a leading member of Togo's opposition National Alliance for Change Party. DRC opposition says a national protest called by the country's Roman Catholic Church for Sunday is on schedule. And at least 17 people were killed in Mozambique after a dump site collapsed. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sports, along with politics, will be on the menu this week when Liberia's new president makes his first official trip outside of Africa. George Weah will not be visiting the United States, which has long had a special relationship with Liberia, but France, where he once was a star soccer player. Lisa Bryant has more for VOA from the French capital.
George,
many French soccer fans know Liberia's new leader simply as Monsieur Georges, the star striker who spent years in France playing for the Paris Saint-Germain and Marseille soccer teams, along with AS Monaco next door. Georges is French in heart and spirit, a former French ambassador told the Journal du Dimanche weekly. This week, it is President Weah who returns to his former home less than a month after his election. Weah's four-day visit here is the last leg of a trip that also took him to Senegal and Morocco. On the menu, lunch Wednesday with President Emmanuel Macron and top sports personalities. According to news reports, the discussions may focus on launching a fund dedicated to sports in Africa. While French-Liberian ties have been strong for a number of years, analysts say, Weah's trip here also underscores a broader shift in France's Africa policy. Less than a year into office, Macron wants to break from the country's colonial past. Africa expert François Gaulme of the French Institute for International Relations says French development aid also underscores the change. Not only is it going up, Gaulme says, but for the first time, France has added Anglophone Liberia to its short list of priority countries, a list that was long monopolized by former Francophone colonies. Gaulme says France may also be a natural destination for leaders of smaller Anglophone West African countries like Liberia, who want to forge closer ties with their regional Francophone counterparts. Development assistance may be another talking point. France has traditionally been slow in delivering aid. Gaulme says Liberia and its new leader may be hoping that this time the positive diplomatic discourse will translate into concrete results. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Dialogue between Togo's government and the opposition aimed at resolving the country's ongoing political crisis continues today, Tuesday, in the capital, Lomé. Ghanaian President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo officially opened the talks, which are scheduled to continue for the next 10 days. The Ghanaian president called on both sides to always put the interest of the country first. The opposition is demanding the restoration of the old constitution, which limits presidential term limits, and for President Faure Gnassingbé to step down. But the government says the resignation of the president is non-negotiable. Kojo Marcus Dema is a leading member of the National Alliance for Change, a Togolese opposition party. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the demands for the unconditional release of the political prisoners are non-negotiable.
We, as opposition, and what we are doing over and over months in Togo is we're asking for the release of political prisoners, mainly those arrested arbitrarily during what we call incendie du marché de Lomé de Cala. The second thing we're asking for is to move quickly to the 1992 original constitution, which means no one can make more than 2 terms. And also we're asking for the vote of what we call the diaspora. Now, all of this with in mind the change in the way of doing business.
We know that in dialogue, there has to be a compromise somewhere in order for any concerns to be resolved. Now, during the dialogue, exactly, is there anything that you wish to concede? And what do you expect the government, or for that matter, President Faure Gnassingbé, to compromise on in order to resolve some of these concerns that you have enumerated?
Okay. You see, when you see all of that, the thing is, each one could be reasonable. Reasonable means, you know, they go far. Even they just push it, you know, they make something as a mess. Let us be reasonable and we see with a consensus what we can do. Specifically, we cannot say, okay, our political prisoners are there, let us compromise. No, you free them, you release them. This is a good move. And we see how we can do. Now, the immediate dismissal or resignation of the head of state can be in the balance. We can talk about it in an upcoming dialogue. Okay, if they make the correct move, maybe we can negotiate something. If they don't, okay, everybody will stand off his position. That is a mess in the country. We don't want that. Now, is premature that I say anything about that aspect of the problem, okay?
So now that the dialogue has begun, you have the Ghanaian president who officially opened the dialogue on Monday. What are your expectations for this dialogue, Mr. Kodjo?
We want each part to be reasonable, mainly the government, as far as what we are asking for. If they are, if possible, we make the correct move. If not, you know, I don't know what will be the outcome of this dialogue. But our wish is that dialogue brings something positive for the country.
How hopeful are Togolese that this 10-day dialogue would help resolve the problems once and for all, so there will be a restoration of constitutional order as the opposition is demanding?
Frankly, the Togolese are fed up with this system. They don't even want any dialogue at all. But we say the way to solve our problem is to sit down and talk. Now, let us say in the coming days we will see a breakthrough, okay? And everybody could be convinced from the move specifically of the government that this dialogue will be a positive one. The government will do the correct move. We have nothing to give because the opposition gives everything day in, day out.
Kodjo Marcus Demand is the leading member of the Togolese Opposition National Alliance for Change. He was speaking with the viewers, Peter Clotty, from the capital, Lomé. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Tuesday, February 20th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. A member of the main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo says national protest called by the country's Roman Catholic Church for Sunday is on schedule. The church, which helped broker the December 31st, 2016 agreement, is calling the protest to demand President Joseph Kabila's resignation. The church also wants Mr. Kabila to pledge he will not run in the presidential election schedule for December 23rd this year. Mr. Kabila was in Zambia this past weekend, where the country's President Edgar Lungu urged him to run for another term. But Martin Fayulu, a member of the main opposition coalition known as the Rassemblement, says President Lungu should focus on running Zambia's affairs, but the Congolese people want President Kabila to step aside.
That statement is he's the owner of that statement, but he is not a Congolese. He's a Zambian. He's running Zambian people. He's not running Congo. He doesn't have anything to say about what the Congolese want. Okay, it's a wish for him, but he has to know that Congolese people want Kabila to go. For us here in Congo, ask to every Congolese Everybody will tell him that for the Congolese, this guy should go.
The Zambian president said that the reason for his comment was that President Kabila is a good president.
Why the bishops, why the Catholic Church is saying that Kabila should go? If he thinks that for him, Kabila is a good guy. I don't know what that means. This is, you know, someone cannot come and provoke others. You know, this is totally unacceptable.
The president of Gambia also is warning foreigners not to interfere with what's happening in the DRC or in Zambia, saying that if the people of the DRC want their president to stay longer, then that's their business.
Yeah, but the people of Congo, they are saying that Kabila should go. The people of Congo, they have a constitution, and they take on their constitution, and nobody can come and change the mind of the Congolese. Today, Congolese are saying that Kabila should go. We want a peaceful transition without Kabila so we can organize a transparent and credible elections, not with Kabila.
You mentioned the protest for the 25th. Is the opposition going to be a part of the protest for the 25th of February?
Of course, we are there. The rally is for everybody. We are going in the morning to the church at 6:30, and after the church, we go and we demonstrate. It's for the whole Congolese. We want to do it everywhere, in Kinshasa, in provinces, in all part of Congo. We'll be part of that. And then we want the president of Zambia to tell Kabila not to kill people. The human being cannot kill another human being. And nobody can kill people because they are protesting, because they want their constitution to be respected, because they want things to move as the majority wants.
Because the last time there was a protest on a Sunday, people were killed.
Exactly. I think nobody wants to have his blood in his hand. I think the good advice to give to someone is please just go because I think the examples these guys can follow. The example of Mugabe. Mugabe and the people of Zimbabwe, they tell him to step down. The guy didn't want. And finally, today is a useless guy. The example of Zuma. Zuma told that he is the king of South Africa. He will stay forever, he will stay, and then he moves power the day he wants. But the people of South Africa, they told him he has to go. And he left the power.
I was wondering, what would be the purpose of the rally? Because the government said it's ready for elections at the end of the year. So what is the purpose of the rally?
The purpose of the rally is that government is illegal. That government is illegitimate. That government cannot take us to the transparent election. That government colluded with the Electoral Commission. They are together, the Electoral Commission, Kabila, and all those guys. And they have demonstrated that they are not willing to organize elections.
Martin Fayulu is a member of the main opposition coalition in the Democratic Republic of Congo, known as the Rassemblement. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. In Malawi, mob violence fueled by local superstition is again in the headlines as police hunt for vigilantes who assaulted a BBC film crew this past weekend. According to a local journalist, the mob accused the reporters of being vampires. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The attack happened Friday around 8 p.m. when the three journalists for British Broadcasting Corporation were filming a documentary on a traditional magic and violence associated with it in the Northern Kalonga district. The journalists are Daliud Grigory Baziad, Amd Hussein Divera, and Prince Anus Asamoah. Local journalist Henry Muhangu accompanied the journalists to the district. He tells VOA the incident occurred in a remote area called Malema.
Then we found that some people were terrified because we were in two vehicles and they started mobilizing themselves. Now, when they came to us, they started confronting us. They thought maybe we are blood suckers. In the first place, the discussion was going on very well. the problem was that the more the people were coming, the more the situation was becoming worse.
He says crowd members armed with stones and other sharp objects assaulted the crew, confiscated some of their equipment, and damaged one of the two vehicles they were traveling in. Muhango, who suffered minor injuries, says they were rescued by police officers and other community leaders who took them to Kalonga District Hospital for medical attention. The attack is the latest of the three recent incidents that resulted from a belief in superstition among Malawians. Earlier this month, an angry mob in southern district of Cholo assaulted workers of international NGO Jipaigo on suspicion they were blood-sucking vampires. 2 weeks ago, vigilantes burned 8 houses and assaulted people suspected of stopping the rains in the Palombe district. Government spokesperson Nicholas Dausi told VOA this morning that the government is worried with the development.
It's really becoming extremely worrisome. At the 21st century, we can't be doing this because this myth is really costing a lot of lives, and we do not want a recurrence of this. It's so primitive and so retrogressive.
Sangwani Tembo is an anthropologist at the Catholic University of Malawi. He says government efforts to debunk old superstitions are not making much headway because of high illiteracy rate among locals.
And if we look at those particular districts as well, issues of illiteracy is high compared to other districts. So in most cases, when there are problems which they can't handle, for instance, issues of drought, in most cases, it's like a scapegoat. So they try to blame someone.
A local media advocacy group, Niger Media Club, has condemned the attack and called for the police to bring the culprits to account. Police say no arrests have been made. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
South Sudan rebels loyal to former First Vice President Riek Machar have confirmed they freed 2 Kenyan pilots after receiving compensation worth $107,700. The rebels have been holding the pilots after their plane crashed last month in Akobo, Greater Upper Nile region. But Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel, deputy military spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition, denies the payment is a ransom.
What happened was their plane crashed in Akobo, and Akobo is our territory or our area of control. So when that plane crashed, it killed a human being. Then it also destroyed properties. That's 2 big buildings where cattle are kept, and it also killed some cattle. So we did not really capture them. We only rescued them because when that incident happened, the owners of the properties and the relatives of the person that was due to the crash, they came rushing, trying to lead the life of the pilot. So the SPLS unit is our area of control. We just came in and we came and took them to where we could protect them. That was not even in jail, but commissioner's place until the law could take effect.
Well, if you say that the plane crashed, then the story here is that the Kenyan government paid a ransom of $107,700. Why did you accept a ransom?
That is not a ransom. Let's not put it like that. It's not a ransom. It is a compensation. A compensation for the property that was lost or that were lost and for the life that was lost. It's even not for us, the SPLIO, that these items were paid. These were paid to relatives of the deceased and the owners of the properties that were damaged. So, you know, come to us. The SPLIO only acted in this case to facilitate the exchange because that is our area of control and the protection of the pilot. That was only what we did. We protected the life of the pilot and only facilitated the exchange. But in this regard, this exchange, this money went straight to the family of the deceased and the owners of the property. So we don't call it ransom, really. And it is not good to call it ransom because that will be politically motivated.
Colonel, you understand why I called it a ransom? Because if the plane came down in January, if it wasn't a ransom, your group would have let the pilots go and then talk later about the destruction of the property. But if you held on to the pilots and then released them after you are paid, then that's a ransom.
We were pushed to do this by SOC, the relatives of the deceased, and the owners of the property. They told us clearly, if you let these people go, you would pay. And in opposition, as a movement, we don't have the right to do this. There is no one who can, even in court, it is in the court of law, even if it's in criminal court. When you do something, whether it is an attempted murder or an accident, that like you just can't go without the court taking it. That if they have a lawyer who can go and defend them in the court of law, let them go to a court. They will find the judges are there because this thing was taken down to the local leaders.
Colonel Lam-Paul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for the Sudan People's Liberation Army in opposition. At least 17 people were killed Monday in Mozambique's capital Maputo when a garbage dump site collapsed on nearby houses. A number of people were feared to be trapped. Amancio Miguel is a reporter with VOA's Portuguese to Africa service. He says the collapse was caused by heavy rainfall and poor city management.
Well, what happened in Maputo, there was heavy rains, and then this caused a collapse of a huge rubbish dump in the outskirts of Maputo. And this is, according to our source, a result of poor seed management.
So did you talk with government officials in terms of what was the cause?
The cause was heavy rain. There was this rubbish dump outside Maputo, which has been operational for the last 40 years. Officially, it has to be closed, but the mayor is still discussing where to relocate it. But meanwhile, people were living in the surroundings. So when it got when it was raining, water got in and then it collapsed. So this is basically the reason of the death of these people.
You're talking about garbage. It seems to me this is the same problem with most African cities, where people are dumping trash all around the cities, and when there's the rainy season, the water flow is blocked, and therefore it causes problems. Is that correct?
In a way, but the thing is, this was like an official rubbish dump that has been there operational for the last 40 years. Now it has to be closed. The government did not close in time. And meanwhile, people live in the surroundings. Some of the people, because of poverty, they came and they built their house right in that area. So when rain came, this was the result.
So what steps now would the government take? Are they going to relocate the people or what?
According to the people that we interview, they are still discussing how to relocate the people because this process has been going at least for the last 10 years. That's why one of the MPs, member of the parliament that we interviewed, he says the mayor of Maputo should be taken into account because he failed to respond to his electoral promise to relocate this dump to another area and not putting the people in risk of their lives. And sadly, 17 people died today.
That's 17 people dead. I mean, were there other people wounded?
They say at least 6 or 10 people, they were wounded, but not serious. So these 7 people, they were living in 7 houses that they collapsed in that area.
Amacio Miguel is a reporter with VOA's Portuguese to Africa service. He was speaking with me in our Washington studio. And that's it for this Tuesday, February 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a lovely day.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation just released its annual letter highlighting the foundation's work and some frequently asked questions. We will discuss this and more next week on Health Chat with our special guest, Hadi Stades, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation's country director for Ethiopia. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.